From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It has been a shocking burst of events in North Africa and the Arab world. An ambassador and three more Americans dead in Libya. Embassy walls stormed in Cairo in Yemen. Angry protest over a crude film. Well-armed militants diving in. Mitt Romney, too, while fire still raged. Big questions have been raised about who's pushing what buttons, pulling what triggers. This hour on Point, 46 hours and counting on new turmoil in the Arab world. You can join the conversation. What is going on here? How do you read the players, the motives, the path this region is on, the politics back home? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. It has been some series of events, reports changing and morphing, even as lots of people, even very highly placed people, try to get a beat on what's going on. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking yesterday at the White House about the deaths of American personnel in Benghazi, Libya, caught the sentiment of many with her remarks.
Today, many Americans are asking, indeed, I asked myself, how could this happen? How could this happen in a country we helped liberate, in a city we helped save from destruction? This question reflects just how complicated and at times how confounding the world can be.
We're going to go to the region in this hour and look at the implications of what has already unfolded. Joining us first today from Egypt is David Kirkpatrick, Cairo bureau chief for the New York Times. He's been watching it all. David, thank you very much for being with us. What's the spread of unrest at this point, David?
Certainly widening. I think last night we saw a protest with some degree of severity in Tunis, in Morocco, in Sudan, again continuing here in Cairo. Around through the night, we've got burning cars and tear gas and clashes with police outside the embassy ongoing. And they flared up anew this afternoon. And meanwhile, in Benghazi and in Tripoli, we have protests apologizing to the United States, thanking the United States for its support and pledging unity with Washington against these criminals.
David, we've seen
a little bit of a spectrum.
We've read reports of protests as far afield as Iran. Of course, I mean, the quick trigger there sometimes, even maybe an Afghanistan concern?
Yeah, I think President Karzai, Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan, chimed in once again to condemn this video that mocking the prophet that set this whole thing off. You know, what's happened here is, if you watch the video closely, it's really aimed at an Egyptian audience.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly who made it, but there's a lot of fingerprints that say it was put together by somebody who was a Coptic Egyptian Christian. And so it struck a chord here in Egypt. And my best guess at this hour is that television spread the protest. I think there was the embassy wall here in Cairo was breached mainly by some young soccer fans at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, September 11th. And then I'm guessing that people in Libya saw those events on television, learned from the television coverage of that occurrence about this video, and then things were set in motion there and around the region. And the television coverage is fanning the flames.
Soccer fans, these tough clubs, also big in the anti-Mubarak demonstrations of the Arab Spring. So first, separate these for us, if you can, David, or help us understand. Coptic Christians in Egypt have been under a lot of pressure and not happy about it since the Arab Spring events there. On the other hand, there's plenty of reports that you've got Islamist militants driving the attack on the consulate in Benghazi. These two would seem to be in opposition. How do these pieces fit together?
Well, what happened here is there's a gentleman based in the United States of Egyptian origin, a Coptic Christian, who has been a hate monger, if you will, for some time. He's criticized by the Coptic Church and most Copts here and has been on a campaign against Islam. So he's your regular old garden variety bigot who happens to be of a Coptic Christian extraction. So he puts together, in all likelihood, he puts together or helps disseminate or promotes this video mocking the prophet with some special digs at Egyptian Muslims and the Egyptian police. So that gets the goat of the Egyptian Muslims and brings out this protest at the U.S. Embassy. What happens then after the protest of the U.S. Embassy here is some people in Libya, including a brigade that goes by the name of Ansar al-Sharia, the supporters of Islamic law, see the events in Egypt, learn probably, I'm guessing, from the television coverage about this video for the first time, and they say to themselves, well, it's time to march to our consulate here in Benghazi. Now, and for context, you know, when our reporter on the scene was interviewing those fighters, several of them brought up what happened in the same city in 2006. Colonel Gaddafi was still in power. A minister in the Italian government wore in public a T-shirt mocking the prophet. Once again, the people of Benghazi thought it was their responsibility to storm the Italian consulate and burn it down. And so people in the crowd were saying, look, you know, you mock the prophet, we burn down the consulate. That's how it goes. And once again, now we see these government troops, this time supporting the transitional government, trying to stop us. What a shame. It's our obligation to protect the prophet from insult.
And there we go. As it spreads today to Yemen, David Kirkpatrick, I hope we catch up with you again. Thanks very much for the briefing in this hour. Thanks for joining us, David, in Cairo. David Kirkpatrick, Cairo Bureau Chief for the New York Times. I want to go right to Washington now and Jake Tapper, Senior White House Correspondent for ABC News. Jake Tapper, this has had a big political blowback in this country. The Romney campaign getting in early with criticism even before it, things reached their height here. Jake, what happened? When did Mitt Romney's campaign first come out with a statement calling what a disgrace, and what ensued, Jake?
Well, this all gets a bit complicated. So what happened was, today's Thursday, so it was Tuesday night, and the attack on the diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya, was still going on. At this point, we knew that one American had been killed. The ambassador, Stevens, was still missing. They didn't know where he was. And obviously, there was quite a firefight going on. Mitt Romney put out a statement. It was embargoed until midnight from his campaign. Criticizing the attacks, obviously, but then also criticizing the Obama administration because, in his words, their first response was not to condemn the attacks, but to sympathize with the attackers. That was based on a statement that had been issued much earlier by the U.S. Embassy in Cairo condemning this anti-Muslim movie that David was just talking about and talking about those who abuse the universal right of free speech. That statement had been put out before the attacks. But subsequent to the attacks, somebody, the public affairs director in the embassy in Cairo, tweeted that they stood by those remarks. So that was what Mitt Romney was talking about. Before I went to bed that night, before President Obama went to bed that night, and before Mitt Romney went to bed that night, the Obama campaign responded, saying that they were shocked that Mitt Romney would choose to politicize this moment. You know, and the next day, there was a lot of criticism. Although initially, most of the coverage was focused just on obviously Wednesday morning, just focused on the tragedy of Ambassador Stevens and Sean Smith and the others being killed. So eventually, there became criticism of Romney for attacking the president based on an apparently false concept of the chronology of that U.S. Embassy statement, thinking that that had been put out after the attack instead of before the attack. And then also just based on the propriety of attacking the president while this attack was still, this physical attack was still going on in Benghazi.
Very much still going on. Here's Mitt Romney the next morning sticking by his statement.
The president takes responsibility not just for the words that come from his mouth, but also from the words that come from his ambassadors. The statement that came from the administration was a statement which is akin to apology, and I think was a severe miscalculation.
Isn't this itself a mixed signal when you criticize the administration at a time that Americans are being killed? Shouldn't politics stop for this?
It's also important for me, just as it was for the White House last night, by the way, to say that the statements were inappropriate. and in my view, a disgraceful statement on the part of our administration to apologize for American values.
Jake Tapper with ABC News in Washington. I mean, just a please, a tidal wave of criticism first coming down on Mitt Romney here, saying this is the wrong time, this is the wrong sentiment, the attack's still going on. How's it playing out, Jake?
Well, a couple things. First of all, Mitt Romney is correct that the White House and the Obama administration more generally did not approve of that statement put out initially by the U.S. Embassy in Cairo, and they did not approve of the subsequent tweets reaffirming that statement. And they distanced themselves. A senior administration official Tuesday night distanced themselves, saying that does not reflect the views of the administration. And they said that their view was reflected in the statement from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So obviously, Mitt Romney was not the only one that had a problem with the statement. More broadly, there's been a criticism of Mitt Romney as William Crystal put it, for the timing and the tone of that initial statement he put out, and in which he said the president seemed to be sympathizing or suggested.
Jim Fallows said he failed the 3 a.m. test of a would-be president. What do you say, Jake?
I think that might be a little strong. I think there are larger issues at play here also, which is there are questions for the administration about the security at these embassies on the anniversary of 9/11, and the more broadly the role of the U.S. Post Arab Spring, and I think the conversation might be taking a turn in that direction now.
We're going to dive into all of that right here, right now. Jake Tapper, senior White House correspondent for ABC News. Thanks so much for being with us, Jake.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the attacks on U.S. embassies in Egypt, Yemen, on the U.S. consulate in Libya, where an American ambassador, J. Christopher Stevens, is dead. And what's going on in the sudden surge of fury and violence, the mystery film, the politics at home, many moving pieces to this. The action still expanding in Yemen today, and maybe Tunis, we're told, maybe protests beyond. Behind it all, we have a dead U.S. ambassador and three more than that, and a very good U.S. ambassador in Libya who had played a critical role in the overthrow, supporting the Libyans during the time when they went after Gaddafi. Here's a little sound of him. You may have heard it, but it just brings home what an involved guy this was, reaching out to the Libyans. He is now dead. This was on the YouTube piece earlier this year, U.S. ambassador to Libya, Chris Stevens, introducing himself to Libya.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Chris Stevens, and I'm the new U.S. ambassador to Libya. I had the honor to serve as the U.S. envoy to the Libyan opposition during the revolution, and I was thrilled to watch the Libyan people stand up and demand their rights. Now I'm excited to return to Libya to continue the great work we've started, building a solid partnership between the United States and Libya to help you, the Libyan people, achieve your goals.
You hear the positive message right there from a man who knew North Africa very, very well, knew Libya very, very well through tough times, and is now dead. J. Christopher Stevens, former U.S. ambassador to Libya. And here, just in the aftermath of Cairo and Benghazi, hundreds of protesters in Yemen storming the U.S. embassy compound in Sana'a. This morning, demonstrators here took bats to the embassy's glass windows. From Paris right now, Christopher Dickey joins us, Paris Bureau Chief and Middle East Regional Editor for Newsweek and the Daily Beast. Christopher Dickey, thank you very much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
What is going on?
Where to begin?
Yeah.
We are in a world of trouble. I think one thing that's important to understand is that every one of these cases has a lot to do with local politics. It's not just the politics in the United States that are affected. You've got Salafis taking over the embassy in Egypt who are trying to one-up the Muslim Brotherhood that's now in charge in Egypt. You've got people in Libya who would very much like to destroy the budding democracy that's taking shape there, and so this is a good target for them. In Yemen, of course, there's a war going on against al-Qaeda, so it's hardly surprising that if people can find an excuse, al-Qaeda sympathizers can find an excuse to attack a U.S. installation, they will do so. In a way, it's surprising there haven't been more injuries. And I think one of the things that we should watch going forward is whether the U.S. is going to encourage the local police or its own forces to use deadly force against these kinds of protests and attacks. I hope not. I think they've been very wise not to so far, because we have lost an ambassador, a terrible thing, we haven't created any martyrs. And once you start to create martyrs in these situations, they just snowball, like a snowball in hell.
We don't know how long that will stand up. I mean, we've got U.S. warships off of Libya now. We've got 50 Marines sent into Libya to Tripoli. If I may, just here's a little bit from President Obama talking about justice will be done in a press conference yesterday, Chris.
No acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation or eclipse the light of the values that we stand for. Today we mourn for more Americans who represent the very best of the United States of America. We will not waver in our commitment to see that justice is done for this terrible act, and make no mistake, justice will be done.
Justice will be done. What kind of follow-up here? You say that these were guys. Let's look at Libya first, because that's where we have a dead ambassador and more than that. You say that Libyans, opposed, eager to destroy a budding democracy. Why? They were looking to get rid of Gaddafi last year. That was not democracy.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean they, Tom? I mean, there are lots of Libyans with lots of priorities and lots of ambitions of their own, and some of them are very radical jihadists. You know, a lot of the people who were blowing themselves up in Iraq in the last decade, trying to kill American troops and often succeeding, were Libyans who had gone there to fight alongside al-Qaeda in Iraq. So I don't think it's surprising that there would be people in Libya who would want to attack America. And, you know, there are a lot of Libyans, and a lot of them are incensed about it. As David Kirkpatrick was saying earlier, the protests in Tripoli and Benghazi today were against the violence and against the people who attacked the consulate there. So, you know, I don't think you can say they. Well, I think there are a few people involved.
I had a particular they in mind, maybe those who went with guns to that consulate in Benghazi. But here is, you're right, quite right. Here's the Libyan president with an apology for the violence and deaths caused.
We apologize to the U.S. and to the American people and to the government and also to the rest of the world for what happened yesterday. And at the same time, we expect the world to cooperate with us in order to confront to what is meant out of this kind of cowardice, criminal acts.
Libyan President Mohamed El-Magharif. What about what do we know at this point about who went into that consulate apparently so eagerly, and what the sequence was? You know, popular protest and or targeted attack, Christopher.
Well, we have a very good account of that by Jamie Detmer, our man on the ground in Libya, on today's Daily Beast. Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot we can't sort out, but some of the attackers seem to have been carrying out quite a coordinated military operation. I think when you listen to President Obama's remarks, the ones that you played earlier, they suggest that President Obama has a pretty clear idea of the people who are behind this. You don't say they can run, but they can't hide if you're just talking about a general abstraction, particularly at this kind of moment. I think he has a pretty clear idea of who was involved, and I think the U.S. will encourage the Libyans to go after them, and I wouldn't be surprised if the United States didn't go after them directly with a little gunboat and drone diplomacy.
Well, then, like who? And is there... I guess part of the confusing piece here is how much orchestration has been going on here. I mean, this film, which people are up in arms about, came out months ago now. But here we are on 9/11, where it all hits the fan, and people seem quite ready with arms.
Yes, but, you know, it came out months ago, of course, and you've had a lot of provocations that were absolutely intended to make Muslim mobs become violent that didn't succeed in doing that over the last year and a half because the Arab Spring basically absorbed all that energy. In this particular case, that film may have come out quite a while ago, but it was only translated into Arabic about 8 or 10 days ago, and it was translated into Egyptian Arabic.
Right.
And it was shown on YouTube, and it was picked up by Egyptian television. And so obviously this was an attempt to build an event. Now, was it an attempt by the people who attacked the embassy, or was it an attempt by, say, lunatic Coptic Christians to incite those people? I mean, the two, in fact, work hand in glove, and they always have. The radicals, the lunatics on the extreme fringes of Christianity and Judaism up against the lunatics on the fringes of Islam. And I think that's what we saw all coalescing on September 11th, which was, of course, the perfect moment for that. But, you know, there are other dates that are important. There were parliamentary elections going on. The decision in parliament in Libya about who would be the prime minister was taking place at the same time all this was going on. That's gone almost completely unremarked in the coverage, as if everything centers just directly and exclusively on the United States. The United States is used as a kind of a foil in the internal politics of these countries.
I guess I'm confused about how the Coptic Christians in Egypt, who have had some serious trouble since the Arab Spring, would benefit from this kind of attack on the U.S. Embassy. Here's a little tape from Al Jazeera. This was on the scene in Cairo, Christy. This was Tuesday night, the riot breaking out, and the Al Jazeera reporter here.
A lot of people are talking about how there are Copts living outside of Egypt, in fact, in the States, who are behind this film and financing of this film. And they're very angry about that. And because there's such a tense relationship between the Copts, the Christians here in the country, and the Muslims, people are worried that this protest will turn into something more in the days to come.
Al Jazeera from Tuesday night. All right, you make a bigoted film, you put it out there. That could simply be bigotry, but the way this got sort of channeled toward 9/11, what would cops have to gain from this, and who's picking up on the anger?
Because the people who back these kinds of films, and it's not only cops, there are a lot of people in the United States who back this kind of thing because they say it shows what radical, crazy, lunatic people Muslims are. This is, and they say, let's provoke them, and then you see when they're violent and they kill people, it wasn't us, we didn't do it, it's Islam. Islam is a religion of violence and hatred. That's the line, and it's used by all kinds of people, not only cops. Christians, although in this case, it looks like it was some very comfortable and it sounds like pretty sleazy people, Egyptians living in the United States who are of Coptic Christian background and who wanted to play this very deadly kind of game. But other people associated with them who talked in favor of this film, like you've got the Pastor Terry Jones in Florida, who's obviously a complete nutcase. And you've got people like this guy Klein, who's involved with all kinds of Christian anti-Muslim causes, also anti-Mormon causes. You know, they are multi-purpose bigots, but they find that Islam is where they get the most traction, and they want to provoke it. So, I mean, Tom, let's not talk about these people as if they are responsible, sensible people. They're not. They're just as crazy as the demonstrators who are carrying out the violence in Cairo.
I mean, where it gets interesting is where you get, squads of gunmen carrying out we've got a dead ambassador on that. You could say crazies, but we've got national policy now on the line, national interests, and the future all. Chris Tickey, stand by in Paris. Denise in Johnston, Rhode Island. Denise, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi.
Hi,
Tom. How are you?
Good.
I just want to say to the speaker that I totally agree. I think one of the things in this country, as much as we love our freedom of speech, we also need to realize that words have consequences. And when these lunatic pastors and other fringe right-wing nuts or religious nuts go out and deliberately instigate anger, violence, and murder, I think the American people should demand that these people are held accountable.
What does that mean, though? We do have freedom of speech. It may be bigoted and incredibly impolitic, but we do have freedom of speech in this country, Denise.
Yes, but when a life is taken because of that freedom, I mean, how many more lives should be taken in the name of freedom of speech?
Denise, we've got it. Chris, let me put it to you. I heard a lot of that kind of perspective from the streets of Cairo in TV reportage and beyond yesterday.
Well, you know, Tom, look, the standard for freedom of speech in the United States has been for a very long time that shouting fire in a crowded theater is not legitimate free speech. The problem is that the whole world is a crowded theater right now. YouTube, mass communications, the internet, satellite television have created a situation where you can be a jerk with a tiny little congregation in Florida, burn a Quran, and get global attention. Now, the question is, we've adapted all kinds of laws and the Constitution in many ways to deal with the terrorist threat, but how are we going to adapt to this, where you can have a few crazies in the United States provoking violence around the world? Is this about our values, as Romney says, or is this about actual responsibility? And I think we have to look at the question of responsibility and the question of shouting fire in a crowded theater.
Let's go to Mitt Romney's statements. They were early. They were harsh. He's taken a lot of heat for them. Here's just a little sample of that. This was on yesterday Morning Joe, MSNBC's Chuck Todd, slamming Mitt Romney, who had attacked Obama's policy and administration.
The only way to get attention is to say something a little outrageous. And I have to say, I'm stunned. They put out this release when they did, before we knew all the facts, before daybreak, before we know for sure whether there are going to be protests that spread around the world. It seemed to be an irresponsible thing to do.
And plenty have piled on that theme, including no small number of Republicans. The president was happy to join that perspective. This is on 60 Minutes CBS, talking with correspondent Steve Croft. Here's the president responding to Governor Romney.
There's a broader lesson to be learned here. And, Governor Romney seems to have a tendency to shoot first, name later. And as president, one of the things I've learned is you can't do that. It's important for you to make sure that the statements that you make are backed up by the facts and that you've thought through the ramifications before you make them.
Do you think it was irresponsible?
I'll let the American people judge that.
Christopher Dickey in Paris with Newsweek and the Daily Beast. You've watched politics and international affairs for a long time. How do you place Mitt Romney's statements and their timing?
I'd say predictable and reprehensible. I think that, also some of the language that he used. I mean, to call the response of the administration disgraceful, that's pretty strong language. I know we're in the middle of an election campaign, but we've also just seen the death of an ambassador. To use language like that and to describe the actions of the commander-in-chief in these kinds of circumstances in that way doesn't speak to a man who feels a lot of responsibility about what government really is. The other thing you have to ask yourself about Mitt Romney is, what the hell does he know about foreign policy? He's never had anything to do with it. And from what we can tell, the people who are advising him and cheering him on are exactly the same people who got us involved in the endless war in Afghanistan and the very long and very bloody war in Iraq, the latter for no good reason at all.
Arab Spring. Mitt Romney's camp is kind of saying, well, look, President Obama, you mishandled the Arab Spring, and now here's the fruit.
Look, the Arab Spring took everybody by surprise, and I'm sure it took the Republicans just as much by surprise, although I talked to Condoleezza Rice about this time last year, and she was doing her damnedest to take credit for the Arab Spring, she and the whole Bush administration, saying, look, we brought democracy to the region. So now that things have gone south and things don't look so good, well, then the Obama administration has mishandled it. Has Romney said that he would have backed Mubarak, kept him in power, despite the massive protests that were shaking the country in early 2011? Actually, hasn't given any solutions at all. I don't want to sound like I'm just attacking Romney, but on this point, something that I cover all the time, he's not recommending anything that's very useful. We could talk about the economy. We might have a different opinion. But talking about foreign policy, he's really out to sea.
Mark Halperin at Time saying maybe seen as one of the most craven and ill-advised tactical moves in the entire campaign, those Romney comments. But, of course, he's got his people rallying to him as well, and there a lot of people are scratching their head now over this region and where it's headed. Christopher Dickey, Middle East Regional Editor for Newsweek, Paris Bureau Chief. Please stand by there in Paris. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the attacks on U.S. embassies in Egypt, Yemen, on the U.S. consulate in Libya, where an American ambassador is dead, and what's going on in the sudden surge of fury and violence, the the crude film, the politics at home. Christopher Dickey joins us. He is Paris bureau chief and Middle East regional editor for Newsweek and The Daily Beast. Shadi Hamid in Doha, Qatar, joins us in just a moment. You can join us as well. What do you see going on here? What's the right response to what we're seeing in Libya, Egypt, Yemen? And where does this region find its even keel? What's your thought today for slain ambassador Chris Stevens? Well, he seemed like a keeper and he's gone. J. Christopher Stevens, ambassador for the U.S. to Libya until his death, smoke inhalation. Yesterday, here, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, she called the attackers a small and savage group and praised Ambassador Stevens' commitment to Libya.
He risked his life to stop a tyrant, then gave his life trying to help build a better Libya. The world needs more Chris Stevenses. I spoke with his sister Anne this morning and told her that he will be remembered as a hero by many nations.
A good and brave American diplomat gone. Let's get a few calls right here. Iowa City, Iowa, Troy's calling. Hi, Troy, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Tom. I think it is an attack on our freedom of speech. You know, it seems like you're a person that from Newsweek is trying to take our right to freedom of speech. Is he's trying to say is, hey, that kind of speech is, you know, a sensitive speech, so we need to get rid of that speech. Well, we need to censor those people that are using their right for freedom of speech.
Well,
so should the government say is, hey, Newsweek, we don't like your their person who is on the air right now because he's...
Troy, may I just ask you, with respect, I just wanted to ask you, what if it were turned around? What if it were, you know, a film being broadcast on American television out of the Middle East portraying Jesus as a child molester and you know, really, really nasty? What would you think?
It does not matter. This is freedom of speech. Freedom of speech means freedom of speech. Even a lot of the Supreme Court judges said, hey, when they ruled against God hates fags, that was freedom of speech. And that was somewhat, and I agree with, hate speech. But that is our right.
Troy, we've got it. Let me get one more. I'll take it to Chris Dickey. Mike in Buffalo, New York. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm listening to this conversation, and I'm reminded of Senator Moynihan's quote, some mistakes need a PhD to make. For your guest to suggest that, and he said this, he'll deny it now, but he said earlier in your broadcast, that the crazies in Florida and the crazies who made this film are just as bad as those who killed the ambassador is such dangerous talk. And Christopher Hitchens, who has said vile things about Judaism, my faith, about Christianity, and about Muslims, was invited into churches to debate. The answer to free speech being abused is more speech, not less speech. And that Trey Parker, the South Park gang, who has said horrible things about all faiths, is just as crazy in your guest's eyes.
But Mike, how do we, if we just hurl, you know, insults at one another, how do we ever get out of the trouble here?
The answer to abused free speech is more speech. That's what we did with Hitchens. Hitchens said horrible things about faith. Horrible, much worse than this video.
Well, I don't know about that. I've actually moderated some of those debates, but they were tough. Christopher Dickey, there's two responses saying, come on, free speech above all.
Well, look, I'm a journalist. I believe in free speech, absolutely. And I, in fact, believe in the right of everybody to be able to say exactly what they want. But I do think we need to think about the question of responsibility. In fact, exactly what's being recommended here to respond to this with words is exactly what I'm doing. I'm saying, let's think about responsibility. Let's also think about the responsibility of the press. Why did we give so much attention to a would-be Quran burner in 2010? Why do we give so much attention to any of these people pushing these really deeply bigoted ideas? Actually, the truth is we usually don't. But when it does happen that somebody is able to project onto the global stage their bigoted views and identify those as American views, well, we create a dangerous situation. You know, we can say that people should have the freedom to do that. Maybe they should. But we should also accept that that's going to have consequences.
One more, and we'll go back to the region. Stowe, Vermont. Steve is calling. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I want to go back to the Romney reaction his original statement. And I think he did a disservice to not only me but the country by politicizing this event before he even knew what the events were unfolding. He basically robbed me and many Americans of a time to mourn the great Ambassador Stevens that we lost. Instead of eulogizing this ambassador and looking back at all the contributions he's given to his country, we had to go into a partisan political fight where both sides, you know, pick their sides and defend their sides instead of doing what we did after 9/11 and all the other terrorist attacks and coming together as a nation and mourning for at least a couple days. So I think that disqualifies him as ever being president because it shows he has a complete lack of judgment and he's just in it for political gain.
Steve, you're not the only one saying that in the last, 24 hours here. I mean, even the timetable itself, you know, we had attacks still going on when some of the statements were coming out. There'll be a lot more hashing over that in the days to come, and I appreciate your call. I want to get to Doha, Qatar, and Shadi Hamid. He's Director of Research at the Brookings Doha Center, fellow at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy. We've spoken a lot with him during the months of the Arab Spring, and now here we are at this past. Shadi Hamid, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us today. Big picture, what's going on here, Shadi?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks. So I think, just to kind of go back to some of the previous debates, there is a real clash of cultures here in some respect, and that's why you're hearing a pretty large gap in narratives. And what I've been hearing from American friends and colleagues is, what's wrong with Muslims and Arabs? Why are they reacting in such a seemingly irrational way? And I feel that two sides are speaking different languages in some respects about what happened. Definitely most Libyans are very much against the killing of the ambassador, and I think we've heard very strong condemnations. But when we get to the bigger issue of blasphemy and whether Arabs think that freedom of speech should include attacks on their faith, the consensus there is pretty clear in most of the Arab world. So I think what we're seeing here is a lack of understanding about how different cultures and religions deal with the problems, if we want to call it that, of free speech.
How does that get resolved, Shadi? Because as Chris Dickey points out, we're in the YouTube era now, the internet era. Anybody can utter anything in any corner of the United States, and it can be global in an instant. You know, with our Constitution, our values, there's no way that's going to be shut down. So where do we go?
Yeah, well, I think it's worth noting that this anti-Islam film, in my view, was much more a pretext rather than the cause of the protest. It could have really been anything. Mm. And the fact of the matter is that anti-American sentiment in the Arab world is so deep-seated based on decades of mistrust and, quite frankly, bad American policies in the region. So you can't expect that after a year and a half of the Arab Spring, people are going to start liking the U.S. So this is the reality. It's going to be like this for a while. And this is going to keep on happening. As long as people are angry at the U.S. for whatever reason, they're going to come out and protest outside of U.S. embassies.
So a pretext, you know, for what? To accomplish what with these attacks and protests and wall scalings? And as Christopher Dickey points out, there's a lot of agendas here, but take us into those that brush a little bit.
Well, I think the simple answer is they're angry about a number of different things, and we're talking about largely Salafi protesters, so ultra-conservative right-wingers, essentially, who feel that they don't have a stake in the existing system. Many of them are lower middle class. The economic situation is terrible in Egypt. That's not to justify it, but to explain some of the context. So these Salafi leaders who are stoking the sentiment, they have people that they can draw on, and those people are going to be receptive. And let's also just remember that we're not talking about hundreds of people who scaled the walls. We're talking about a small number that scaled the walls and resorted to violence. Otherwise, you had, you know, about 2,000 people protesting peacefully. So we should even be careful about drawing these broad brush conclusions about what this means about, you know, Egyptians or Arabs or Muslims. You're always going to have a small fringe that is very angry for a number of different reasons. They feel their faith is under attack. I don't agree with their perception, but that's how they feel.
Yeah, I think we get that there are layers to this, and you can have popular anger, but there are armed guys within that. And in Benghazi, they went right at this consulate, and they did it very quickly. Take Libya. With what agenda there? To not have a democratic government in response to Gaddafi? Weren't these some of the same militants who were opposed to Gaddafi? What's their goal?
Well, I think we're getting more reports now that the attacks on the U.S. employees may have been planned by a specific terrorist group.
That's what I'm asking about. So, for what?
Sorry?
That's what I'm asking about, I guess. For what? To what end?
Well, part of it is they want the U.S. out. They see the U.S. as a nefarious force that is encroaching on Libya's sovereignty. They don't have specific political aims beyond forcing America out and bringing the fight to the U.S. It's the same thing as 9/11 and other terrorist attacks. It doesn't have a specific political logic about we want to accomplish, you know, 1, 2, and 3. I don't think that's the best way to look at it. These are people who hate America, who have aims that can't really be negotiated with. And again, that's why we're talking about this small fringe. But if we're talking about the Salafi movement more broadly in Libya, there are some Salafis in Libya who want to be part of the political system. They want to be integrated. So even within the Salafi movement, you have those who use violence and terrorism and those who might be radical but still play the game peacefully.
Christopher Dickey, take it to Egypt. Here's a big country. They've gone through a big revolution. You've got Mohamed Morsi with the Muslim Brotherhood now as the leader of the country. Where does this relationship go with the United States? A lot of audible frustration out of Washington at the kind of slow pace of the Egyptian government coming through to the defense of the U.S. embassy.
Well, first of all, you've got to remember that the United States was used to dealing with a dictator for many years there. It was one-stop shopping. You go to Mubarak and he'd do, you'd negotiate a little bit with him, he'd do what you wanted, and it'd get done, more or less. Although I think that relationship was also overrated. Mubarak, while he was always publicly friendly to the United States, often to play to the Egyptian people, would act as if he was hostile to the United States. It all gets very complicated when you're actually on the ground. I think, you know, just going back to something that Shadi was saying, let's not overemphasize the anti-Americanism that exists. Of course it exists. But the characteristic that one of the most striking characteristics of the Arab Spring for 18 months was how irrelevant the United States was to what was going on.
Which is why this shocks a lot of people now, I think.
Well, but it's also why we should look at exactly what Shadi's saying. These are often very small groups that are involved in this. And it's a point that you were making. In the case of Libya, in the case of the Benghazi consulate attack, I'd come back to this question of what is actually known about the people with the rocket-propelled grenades and who were carrying out what looks like a fairly well-coordinated guerrilla military operation. You know, my suspicion, I mean, and not only my suspicion, our reporting by Jamie Detmer on the ground suggests that a lot of them are part of this group, Ansar al-Sharia, that they are looking not only to overthrow the democratic process in the region and get the U.S. And in Libya, but also get the U.S. out. But that also means that when Hillary Clinton is talking about these people and President Obama is talking about these people, they know who they're talking about. And I would suspect that one of the developments in the next few days is that we're going to see a focus in on those people, those groups, the efforts to bring them to justice, as President Obama says. And that will kind of separate out the death of the ambassador from this broader, more inchoate opposition
well,
to the United States.
Maybe, or, you know, who knows, or bring more mobs to more embassies. A couple more callers, Kathy in Newport, Vermont. Kathy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I am so glad to hear such intelligent analysis by Christopher Dickey. I so appreciate your program, Tom. And it's such a tragic loss of Chris Stevens.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad also that we have a cool-headed president in Barack Obama. I think that Christopher Dickey's comments about Romney are right on, and he's just a buffoon. He's playing to the right. to the far right. He continues making these ridiculous statements, as he did in London. I do wonder why we are still, the media is still playing excerpts from that quasi-film.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. How much of that is news to share? When does blasphemy just get left? I mean, it's on YouTube anyway. I don't know how to answer that in a short time. But Shadi Hamida, a big question for you. Thank you, Kathy. Noted. Shadi, what about this? Is there a way that this gets sort of excised and dealt with, or is the sentiment such and the particular interest of small groups maybe such that we could see this kind of protest outside embassies all over the Arab world? I mean, we've got reports from Tunis now. We've got Yemen. We've got Libya already. There's Cairo, where they're back at the embassy today. We're hearing about stuff in Iran, Afghanistan. Could we have a wave here, Shadi?
Exactly. It's spreading. And that's why I think the U.S. should get more involved, not less. The more, if we disengage now, Salafi extremists are going to grow more influential. There's going to be a power vacuum. To some extent, there already is a power vacuum. What these countries need is to have a successful economic and political recovery. And U.S. economic support is absolutely crucial to that. It would be a great tragedy if we start to disengage, throw up our hands and say Arabs are hopeless, when that will only make the events of two days ago more likely to happen. So this is not the time to give up, because the vast majority of certainly Libyans, I mean, Libya is the most pro-American country in the Arab world, but even in other countries, we do have an opportunity to support their democratic transitions. And if we do that consistently over the next few years and show people that instead of supporting dictators as we did for five decades, that we're changing, we're doing the right thing now, I think you'll start to see people slowly shifting their opinion.
Well, we're going to have to harden some embassies, stiffen some spine, open eyes and ears. Shadi Hamid at Brookings Doha Center, Christopher Dickey with Newsweek and the Daily Beast. Our great thanks to you both. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.